You've been listening to Counterspin on the stations of Coast Community Radio, KMUN 91.9 FM Astoria, Oregon, KTCB 89.5 FM Tillamook, Oregon. We're streaming at coastradio.org, and we're on your mobile using the TuneIn app. It's 9:28 and some seconds, and we're going to call it close enough to 9:30 to welcome you to Food Talk. I'm Marianne Myers, and I'm here with my ever-fabulous co-host, Linda Perkins. Good morning.
Good morning. Even though it's early, I got my apron on.
I know. You're always ready, really.
36 seconds early. Janie on the spot.
That's right. That's you. Oh, we'll change your name. What have you been cooking?
Well, I think I've been cooking a lot. I made some, I've been cooking with some fancy stuff.
Really?
Some fancy stuff.
What's the occasion?
Nothing. Just first thing was a ham for Easter.
Uh-huh.
When I put a glaze on a ham and I pretend I live back in Minnesota because that's what we eat back there, I use apple cider. I like the flavor of it. Apple cider, mustard, brown sugar, some spices, that kind of thing. You know, clove, nutmeg. Come on, brain. There's a third one. Well, I can't remember. But it takes so long to reduce because most of it is apple cider. There's some apple cider vinegar in there, too, and that's really liquid. So it really takes, in a little teeny tiny saucepan, it takes an hour to reduce. And that's just so long, you know. And because there's brown sugar in it, it wants to boil over because it's in a teeny tiny saucepan. And so to watch it for an hour is just a pain. And so I have some boiled apple cider that I use to make apple cider caramels, because I tried boiling my own apple cider and it just ends up tasting like sugar. It doesn't taste like apples.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, but the stuff you buy tastes really apple-y and it's thick. And so I thought, well, I have that and I bet it would even be better, because if I'm boiling apple cider regular, just plain alone, and then trying to see if and finding out that it doesn't taste like apples, I bet in my glaze there's not that much apple coming through either. So I just used all my regular ingredients, and then I used the apple cider that was boiled, and it reduced in like 10 minutes, and it was really, really good.
Oh.
Yeah.
Now, where do you get that? That sounds exotic.
I don't think we can say, can we?
Well, I mean, can you buy it locally in a grocery store?
No,
you
have to go online.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And sorry about that.
No, well, that's all right. That's if it's not here, it's not here.
But that's why it's fancy.
Exactly right. It's imported.
Yeah, imported.
From Peoria. Yeah.
Oh, I actually lived in Peoria. Oh, what an experience. Not much of an arts culture.
Really?
Yeah.
Well.
You can go out for like a hamburger and beer, or you can go out for pizza and beer. That's the variety.
You know we're going to get a cold.
Yeah. Yeah. Oof. Duh. Well, and then the other fancy thing, darling, fancy. Say it with your teeth together, fancy. The other fancy thing is ginger syrup.
Oh, I love ginger syrup.
Yeah, it's really good. It's not super sweet, but I made your curry chicken salad. And so normally it's, you know, mayonnaise and yogurt and curry and honey and lime juice and some other stuff. But I thought, you know what? I kind of want to, because your recipe uses just regular yogurt, which is kind of soupy. And I had some Greek yogurt, and uh-huh. I'd already poured the liquid off it, so it was kind of like Greek glop. I mean, it was quite thick.
It's custardy. Yeah.
Yeah, very, yeah. And so I thought, well, it wouldn't matter if I put a little more in there. And so why don't I use ginger syrup instead of honey? And the liquidy would replace the liquid that I drained off of the yogurt for something else, you know. And it was really good. That ginger syrup was really good. Ooh. With curry. Really, really good. So those are my two fancy things that I used.
I love that ginger syrup for so many things. I like it just even on toast.
Really?
Oh, yeah. I like it on everything. I think that that's
You know, I bet that that would really be good with butter and bread that's
hot.
Yeah,
like
that
honey.
That would really be good. Yeah.
Yeah,
oh,
it's lovely.
I never thought of that. Well, this is the first bottle of it I've ever bought, and I like it. I mean, I think it's just something that's fun and different. And
yeah.
I bet it would be good in tea.
Oh, I bet it would be fabulous in tea.
Yeah. I'm going to try it.
We'll get back to you on the tea thing.
Yeah.
I made I made chicken with 40 cloves of garlic last night.
Oh, because it was a holiday.
Well, because it was my husband's birthday.
Oh, really?
Yes.
Oh, I saw on Facebook it was his birthday because it was April.
You saw on Facebook?
I know, because it
was... I'm not on Facebook. I don't see it.
No, I know. But it was April 1st, I thought he was lying.
No.
Oh, yeah. I thought he wanted presents. I'm so sorry.
I'm not saying that he doesn't want presents. I'm just saying I can't speak to that. But
I'm just like, I'm not making that man a cake. I mean, that's what a vile person I am.
No, it's no joke. Anyway, I made 40 cloves chicken because it's one of his favorites, and I don't make it all that often. But I got to tell you, I just use Ina Garten's recipe, Barefoot Contessa recipe for 40 cloves, and it is so, so, so good. And she makes, you know, a wheelbarrow full of it. I mean, she's
most
like,
of her recipes are
buy
pretty large.
Two
yeah.
chickens, yeah. And I usually just cut it in half, but I made the full recipe this time because tonight I have to make pot pies for a couple of things, and I. That 40 cloves
that
chicken
sounds so good.
Is so good in pot pies. So
that
good.
Is so funny because I have to make a chicken pot pie. I'm going to do that.
Are
I'm
going
to do exactly that. I can't believe my luck that I talked to you about that. That's such a good idea.
It's really a delicious recipe. It is so easy. It's like takes 45 minutes for the whole thing.
Okay.
And I just really like it. I like the process, and it always comes out delicious. And part of the reason is it has, you know, cognac and cream.
Okay.
And wine.
Yeah. The cloves, are they peeled?
Yes, they're peeled, but her method, and I do it this way because it's sort of gets the cloves going. She just has you take however many cloves you're going to put in. I don't normally count to 40. I mm-hmm. just like four heads.
Yeah.
Break it into cloves, drop them in boiling water for 1 minute.
Okay.
And then pull them out and just lay them on the cutting board until they're cool enough to handle. And they peel really easy that
okay.
way, but they've also started to, you know, they've blanched.
Yes.
So that when you put them in the fabulous sauce from the chicken drippings and the butter and the olive oil, it they brown up really nice and quickly.
Okay.
So when you eat them, they're just like biting into a little pillow
piece of
candy. Loveliness. Yeah. It's really, really good. I had
okay.
forgotten how fabulously good
okay.
that was. And I don't know why I don't make it more because you don't have to use cognac. You could use brandy,
okay.
Which is less expensive, and probably in this particular recipe, you may or may not even know the difference. But I do think that it adds a layer of flavor that is... And I didn't have dry white wine. I didn't want to open a bottle of dry
mm-hmm.
white wine that we weren't going to drink and use a cup and a half of it, and then it sits forever. But I did have an open bottle of quince cider in the fridge. And
oh, what a good idea.
Used quince cider, and it was really quite lovely.
Okay.
So it's one of those use what you have deals,
yeah.
right?
Yeah. Quince cider. I'm impressed.
Oh, it's so good.
I didn't
good.
Even know we had that here.
Well, it's from Washington.
Okay.
And I don't know that it's even available anymore, but at the time, I'm not a huge cider fan.
Mm-hmm.
I can really take it or leave it, and mostly I leave it. But I went to a tasting, I think, at the co-op a million years ago, and that... I really liked that,
okay.
and I bought several bottles of it, and I still have them because, you know, I can take it or leave it. But anyway, I had opened it. I don't know. We had a sip of it, and then I had this left, and I was able to use it in the chicken. It was really, really good. I'm not sure that it even – I don't think I could have told the difference between that and some white wine.
Okay.
In the end, you know, it all simmers for quite a while. So,
what do you think if you didn't use the brandy but you had wine? Not as good?
Well, no, I think it would probably be okay. I mean, there's still the butter and the cream. And the cream is only 2 tablespoons.
Okay.
It's not, none of this is a lot, although
mm-hmm.
there is 3 tablespoons of brandy in there.
Yeah.
So you might miss it.
But I just don't know.
And a cup and a half of white wine. So
okay.
I'm just saying for folks who are listening, that particular recipe I don't think is on the northcoastfoodweb.org website recipe thing, but it is Ina Garten's
just
recipe.
Google it, yeah.
Yeah, just Google it. You can go to food to ear, what do you, Food Network, and just search for it. It's there. It's free. It's great. It's reliably great.
That's funny, the blanching of the garlic, because the time that I do that the most is if I'm making, there's a French potato salad that I make where it has like a vinaigrette instead of like a creamy mayonnaise dressing. Uh-huh. And I like the garlic in it, but I just, in potato salad, you know, I like mine bland and tasteless. No, I'm just kidding. But I like it. I like it not to be assaultive, you know.
Yeah.
And so to put the garlic in there, I peel them and then I blanch them for about 45 seconds, a minute. And then it just makes them milder, not so bitey. And I wanted that with that potato salad, but I wanted the garlic raw. And so I never thought of doing it in the peels, and I never thought that it would like start, you know, the whole caramelization thing or make that easier. That's really something. I learned something today.
They do really slip right out of their skins after a minute in boiling water. And I always cut the little root end off. I know you don't have to do that, but I don't like to bite into that, you know, especially if the rest of the clove is squishy, lovely, and then there's that little hard thing on the end. So I just cut them off. But they are really easy to peel that way. And I know that there's a plethora of ways to, you know, like hacks to peel garlic quickly and easily, but blanching them gives you the extra. They've been cooked a little bit.
So. I know sometimes chefs will take that little nubbin out of there, out of the garlic. They say that that makes it bitter. I've never done that, but there's people that I've mentioned that to, and they're like, "Well, duh, of course."
Well, you know, when you buy, if you go to a wholesale place, or maybe not even, maybe just a regular grocery store, I don't know, but if you buy a jar of peeled garlic cloves, they all have the little root end still on them.
Yeah
so I don't know. I
but
cut
you
it
know
right
what
off.
I mean, that little germ thing, that little nubbin inside,
that that will sprout if you leave it.
Oh, and that is another thing. Oh, gentle listeners, it's spring. Don't do what I did. Don't go buy a 25-pound bag of onions because they know it's spring. Oh. I have an onion tree.
You could just stick them in the ground. And,
I know. Woo-hoo. And the dogs could dig them up. Yeah, you forget where I live.
Oh my gosh.
But yeah, it's true. All that stuff knows that it's spring. And it's funny, too, this time of year, I'll always get cherry tomatoes that have little tomato plants growing in them, too. And but yeah, the onions are the big culprits. Potatoes, too. Potatoes are lasting about, you know, 10 days at my house, and then they're all ready to woohoo go. Yep. They know it's spring. Don't buy anything that came from the ground in large quantities. The carrots are very fancily dressed with their frilly hats.
Oh, I think we're better off with leeks right now, because the onions that I've been getting, at least in the big bags, are pretty funky. They've been in the warehouse way too
long. For 11 months. Yeah.
Oh, yeah. So you got a massive amount of waste.
Yeah.
And overdone onions are really stinky.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yuck. Anyway, I noticed that particularly with red onions lately. I just cannot seem to buy a bag of onions.
Yeah.
I have to just buy an onion when I need one.
Yeah.
It's just not the right time yet.
Mm-mm. Pretty soon. They're so good when they're brand new.
Yep. I'm seeing, you know, it's getting harder to find a winter squash.
Yeah.
We're on the cusp.
Yeah, and it should be hard. It's spring.
I know.
There was not ice, but, you know, like sleet frozen together on the deck this morning.
Oh, my gosh.
I was surprised.
Some, noisy weather events in the night. Holy cow.
Yeah.
Yep. So I wonder what you put in your pot pie.
That's the thing. I am not super good at making pot pie because sometimes, and you can ask Dulcie Taylor, it turns out really gloppy. So I need, that was actually something that I was going to do this time, is really pay attention to what I do rather than think, I know what I'm doing, and just throw everything together and having it turn into cement. So, and also I was trying to decide if I should do pie crust or if I should do puff pastry, or if I should do pie crust on the bottom and puff pastry on top. I was just trying to decide. And you know how sometimes your brain just isn't capable of making any decisions? Like, I was completely confounded by the fact that on my drive-in today that my turn signal sounds different. And that's all I could think about. Why does my turn signal sound different? And I need to maybe drink some more coffee.
Well, I'm not sure about pot pie, but I can tell you that sometimes when your turn signal sounds different, it's because your bulb is burning out or has burned out. You might want to make sure you have a turn signal.
Okay.
Anyway, besides that, why don't you just back off on the roux if it's too glossy?
Oh, clearly that's the answer.
Well, you're welcome.
But I mean, just sometimes, you know how you're just so like, oh yeah, I'll just make that, and then something, you just don't pay attention and it turns super gloppy.
Hey, I got this great cookbook. I love this cookbook, which I got at a local independent bookstore.
And you realize that right now you're like an enabler.
No, I know. No, you can borrow mine.
Okay.
But anyway, it's called Dinner Pies. And then it's got like this 2-paragraph long subtitle. I don't know. But anyway, it's Dinner Pies. And we cooked a couple of them recently in a dinner pie class because they sounded so good. And they were, in fact. And one of them was a vegetable pot pie. And instead of puff pastry or pie crust, the top was, it had no bottom crust. Is that true? Yes, it had no bottom crust. And the top was pumpkin sage biscuits.
Oh, my gosh.
And really, that was quite lovely.
Yeah.
So, I mean, biscuits are another option, although I'm going to be lazy tonight and use puff pastry because it's just so simple.
Are you just going to put it on the top?
I'm just going to put it on the top, but I think I might even, because it's going to be feeding a group, I might even cut it, you know, with a cookie cutter so that they're...
Oh, so it's easy?
So you can see the servings easily and be able to scoop it out without...
Okay.
Because puff pastry is kind of problematic.
For cutting, yeah.
Yeah.
What kind of pan do you put it in? Like, what are you going to cook it in?
I think I'm just going to cook it in a Pyrex, like a square...
Okay.
A brown, what I think of as a brownie pan, you know, whatever is, 8x8, 9x9, something like that.
Okay.
I think so. I don't know.
You know how, I wonder if this would work. You know how pies, you cut that vent in them?
Yeah.
I wonder if it would work to take the puff pastry and just cut big slashes in it where the pieces would be out. I think that might be pretty.
I think it might be really pretty. And actually, that would be better because you'd get more pastry.
Yeah, I think I might do that. Okay, thank you.
That's a good one. Well, the other one, right after I remind people about the fact that they're listening to Food Talk on Coast Community Radio, and that Food Talk is a co-production of Coast Community Radio and the North Coast Food Web. The other one that we made that I found in this cookbook that's new to me, I don't know the vintage of the cookbook, but anyway, it's new to me, was a version of shepherd's pie that I had never made. It has a bottom crust. I had never made a shepherd's pie with a bottom crust. But
So it had a crust on the bottom and then potatoes on top.
Yep.
Okay.
And it was mashed sweet potatoes on top. It was really, really good.
Oh, wow.
And a combination of... I know that... or at least I feel like I know that shepherd's pie purists will not use ground meat, but this had
I didn't know that.
A combination of
I think pretty much every shepherd's pie I've ever had ground meat in it. I didn't know that that was a no-no.
I don't think it's a no-no.
It's just not traditional.
It's delicious, but I think that maybe that's like a British thing, or I don't even know the origin of shepherd's pie, but... I don't know. Where do they have a lot of shepherds? Because apparently they invented it, and I can't imagine that they're making pie crust, but maybe they are.
Okay.
I don't know. Anyway, I have been told before in a cooking class I was teaching where we made a shepherd's pie that it should have cubed, you know, roast pork or whatever.
I didn't know that. So there's a shepherd's pie thing that I make that's, you know, easy, but I have those muffin pans that are Texas size. They're big. So you just take one of those store-bought big biscuits and you smash it into there.
Oh.
And then you put the ground spiced meat in there. And it has to be pretty heavily spiced for, I think, shepherd's pie, because you're taking care, or you're covering for the bland potatoes and the bland crust.
Right.
So pretty heavily spiced meat, then some vegetables on top, and then the potatoes. And it's just a thing you can just take out and eat. It's like a little hand pie almost.
Nice.
Yeah. And those work really good. Dale really likes those. Poor Dale. I just like to say that every show. Poor Dale. Poor Dale, because I haven't made him in about 5 years.
Sadly, the entire world now thinks poor is his first name. So, is there any kind of sauce or roux or anything in there? Or is it just veg and potatoes and...
I don't remember it being very saucy.
Okay.
But I'm sure that there was something.
Because otherwise it seems like it would fall apart if you picked it up.
No, because the biscuit...
Oh, the biscuit.
So I think that how it was different is rather than being really saucy, it was really heavily spiced meat. And then some sautéed vegetables on top, basically carrots and green beans, I think, if I remember right. And then, and I think I changed the recipe because it was carrots and peas and just green beans sounded better. And then the potatoes on top. And then I think there's cheese on top of the potatoes.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, not saucy.
Yum.
Yeah.
These are, I feel like pot pies and shepherd's pies and all kinds of braises are sort of the last ditch of winter,
yeah.
And pretty soon we're not going to want to do those at all. So that's we might as well just do them right now.
That's so funny that you said that because I made a big pot of split pea soup. I got up the other morning. Well, first of all, the house is so cold. I'm like, why is this house so cold? Why is the kitchen 46 degrees?
What?
And because there was sleet all over the deck, you know, the kind of frozen little balls of sleet. It was cold. And this is about a week ago. And the little dog had his head out the dog door. So the flap was up and was protecting him from the hail. And he was just watching the weather. And he'd been watching that weather apparently for about an hour and a half because the kitchen was 46 degrees. So I was so cold. And so I'm like, I'm making pea soup. And so I got this big pot of pea soup going on the stove. And then the sun came out and the birds were singing and it was hot out and I felt stupid. But I did learn something at the store. I bought a ham hock.
Yes.
I was talking to Marianne Merck and she said, you can't get a good ham hock in this town. And I thought, no, I think you can. But then I went and I got a ham hock and it had the word hock on the label and that wasn't what I was thinking a hock was. And it turned out that what I think a hock is a shank.
Oh.
So a shank, a smoked ham shank, and a lot of the stores around here have them in their freezer section.
Yes.
So a smoked ham shank is what I was calling a hock, and I'm like, how can she think that isn't good? Well, it's because the shank is like 3 times bigger than the hock.
Yes.
And so, yes, it's better. And then also, it's a lot meatier, and so you get just a lot more of that like shredded meat that's been cooking in there for a long time, and it looks very like rustic and grandma-y, you know?
Yeah.
So, yeah, that was it. I just had the wrong word. So maybe you can't get a good ham hock because they're very small, but the shanks were big and good.
Yum. And, that makes me think that to mention that the fabulous Pat Milliman was teaching a class on Vietnamese food at the Food Web recently.
Okay.
And one of the things that she was doing was roasting bones to make stock.
Mm-hmm.
And she had found bones at one of our local butcher shops, and they split them for her so that all that good stuff on the inside.
That's nice.
Yeah, really nice. Yeah. So, and I imagine that any place with a butcher counter would do that.
That's a good idea.
Upon request.
Yeah, I like to make French onion soup, and I make my own veal stock, and that is just such a long process. And part of that is probably because my bones aren't split. So you roast the bones for at least an hour and a half on a high heat, like 450, and then it's just in a pot, and it's a big pot. I mean, I'm making a big pot of stock. I'm making it for the year.
Uh-huh.
But yeah, it goes for. I mean, the whole process. You got to start early because it's like 17 hours.
Wow.
Yeah, and so starting from roasting, you know, and then it just takes forever. And I bet if I split those bones, I could cut 5 hours off of that. I wish I'd talked to Pat.
Well, next year.
Yeah, yeah.
Or this year if you haven't done it yet. Yeah, I would not have thought to ask for that. But of course, you know, you want all the collagen and all the marrow and all the flavor.
In the stock, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And 17 hours, that's a huge commitment, but I bet you can taste every single minute of it when you eat the
soup.
And
it's so nice to have it in the freezer then for all year, you know. And anything French.
Which one of your freezers? Do you have a soup freezer?
I do. Thank you. Freezer number 9. You know, there's a lot of soups that I like cold, though, thinking about summer coming up, you know?
Yeah.
Especially tomato basil. I love that cold with a little bit of orange juice in it. I know that sounds stupid, but it's so good. And I didn't make that idea up. You know, there's a place in Portland that does that they're famous for it. So, yeah, that's really good. And there's a lot of soups that I like cold, and maybe a lot of people wouldn't, but you know, it's not just the gazpacho for summer, you know?
Yeah, which I love.
Yeah, me too. I can't wait. I know, tomatoes.
Yay. That's the thing. And I got to tell you, this is, God. But when a tomato is a key ingredient, like mm-hmm. if it's a BLT mm-hmm. or the
you
other
eat
night.
Those solid I, for a month.
I had to practically take out a loan. I bought one small organic heirloom tomato so that when I put it on the sandwich, it would taste like a tomato.
A real tomato.
And it was $1.40.
They got like a financing guy sitting beside the tomatoes.
I'm like, could you wrap that in velvet for me? Because I don't want to have, I don't want anything to happen to that tomato. I took it out of the bag and put it in my cup holder in the car.
Do you know what that reminds me of when you and Norma were in Spain and they had that, what was that ham that they had that they gave to you in a guitar case?
Oh, yeah.
To protect it. What was that?
The Iberico.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, they should have like little, like, I guess it'd be like a little flute case for
yes,
the tomato.
Yes, or one of those cases that you carry your pool balls in. That'd be perfect.
Yes, yes.
That'd
yes.
be perfect. I'm telling you, I mean, if you're going to, it's, might as well be buying, I don't even know what.
Yeah.
Jewelry.
It's as good as it. I'm very excited for tomatoes. I planted, and by me, I mean poor Dale, herb gardens. Not herb gardens, but we have two dogs, and their nickname for Easter is Trample Bunnies, which lets you know the condition of my current herb garden, which is in the ground. So poor Dale, he got containers for the top of the railings on the deck.
Nice.
You know,
yeah.
And I already have two of those, and those work good because the dogs can only sniff them as opposed to trample them.
And they drain well, and that's important for herbs.
Yeah, and that's a sunny spot in our yard. So anyway, got a couple more. Planted a bunch of thyme because I've already decimated what is left of my thyme trample bunnies. And then same thing with chives. And then some other things. And then Teresa Retzlaff said that tarragon, I didn't know this, should be planted in a pot by itself. She says it just does. And I have never had good luck with tarragon, and I didn't know. She says it just does a lot better if it's in a pot by itself and its roots can just do whatever they want to do.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, yeah. So anyway, I got some tarragon, and I'm going to try just to put it in a pot by itself. It's not that it's like bamboo or something and you have to contain it. It just does better. And so,
okay, I'm going to do that for the herb garden at the Food Web. I put tarragon in the ground last year, and it did really well, but it's, you know, it flops over and lays on the ground and takes up an unconscionable amount of space in a small garden.
You could do like a tomato cage around it, maybe.
Yeah, or just put it up off the ground in a pot and let it flop over the edge if it wants to.
And then
to.
You can use the ground underneath it. Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
That's a great idea. Thank you, Teresa.
We love you.
I'm excited to clean out the garden and get it beefed up again.
Yeah.
There's certain things that come back every year in the herb garden, and there's other things that I end up having to start over every year, mostly because I'm a bad steward of it during the winter.
Oh, I don't know. I'm just such a bad gardener. It's just something that's never appealed to me, and I know that people that cook, and I've said this before, usually their other hobby is gardening, but you can look at my house and my gardening style of abandoned homestead that and tell that it's just, I don't know why, it just...
I'm not big on it either.
I don't
and
know
I
why.
Think I have said in food columns in the past, I have said if I have to grow it, catch it, farm it, I will dig it. I'm not going to do it. It needs to show up on my counter. I'll clean it and I'll cook it, but I am just not, I'm not interested in that whole first step.
Okay.
I'll just support the people who are.
Yeah, I wouldn't survive in the wild.
Oh, God.
I'm going to need a grocer here in Armageddon.
Oh, my gosh. It's civilization,
yeah.
I guess.
So what else have you been cooking besides the 40 clove chicken?
Let me think. Well, you know what? We had, atypically, we never have this. I am married to a pool player, and so he spends 2 or 3 nights a week in various bars shooting competition pool. So he gets his fill of burgers and a beer.
Okay.
I, on the other hand, do not, and although I don't crave them very often, once in a while I really do, and I came by through the good friendship of the fabulous Uriah Hulsey from the Colombian Cafe, brought me some Wagyu beef.
Wow.
And so we had really good burgers the other night, which was another reason why I had to buy a $30 tomato. But that was just really good. There's something about really good beef, and I just got a couple of ciabatta rolls, and nothing really fancy, but they were just delicious.
Yeah. When you want something like that and you can make it really good, that's really satisfying.
Yeah, it's great. I'm good for another 6-8 months now, I think, burger-wise.
So I've got Poor Dale and you've got Pool Tom. One letter different.
Poor and Pool. Yeah, I'm really lucky. I suspect this might be true for you. I'm really lucky to be married to someone who is just happy to be cooked for. He's not picky.
Oh, yeah.
He just will, you know, he appreciates anything that shows up on the plate.
Dale's so polite because he'll say everything is delicious, and you can tell how much he likes it by how many times he says it's delicious, because he's like, this is delicious, and that's all, you know. Oh, I shouldn't have put the anchovies and the beets in there.
Make a note for next time.
But he's like, really good, this is really good, you should make it tomorrow too, you know, then you know it's really good.
Yeah, I love that. I listen for the noises. If I hear that, you know, that bite is being enjoyed, then I'm like, okay, that's good. I'll try to do that again.
Yeah.
But anyway, yep. So
I'll quick write down what I did.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's what I'm going to do. Yeah. Oh, my gosh. I'm so bad about that.
I have to now, or I just won't remember. I'm like, oh, I wish I could make that pizza I made that one time. Oh, well.
Well,
it's gone.
You know, I need to test a whole bunch of recipes because I'm putting together a cookbook from old food columns.
Okay.
And I really want to test the recipes and make sure that there wasn't like a typo or all those things that can happen, and to make sure that I still really like them. But that requires a lot of discipline about making notes.
Yeah.
Because you do it once and then you go, okay, I'm going to change this one thing. And then you got to write down what you changed.
Mm-hmm.
And that's tough for me.
Mm-hmm. Because I'm used to remembering, but whoop.
Yep. That's the thing. You know, I see by the clock on the wall that we have to go. What the heck?
Bye-bye.